Okay, a good Erev Shabbos. We are all listening to the Chassan Shmooze that you wish you had but never got. Let me again give a couple of words of introduction. I think it's really important, even though I repeat myself, because of the sensitive matter of this shiur, it is important to still review some basics. Number one, this is not a psak shiur. I'm not a posik. I will share with you different makoros that I understand, that I was zocher to understand from the Torah, and give you the sources. I will tell you if it's my opinion. I'll tell you if it's a psychological insight, and you then could take those insights and discuss them or share them with whoever you go to for advice. It's important to listen to the shiurim in order. I think that one shiur does build on the other, and there's a lot of detail. It's important that people listen to the shiurim in order and not take shortcuts in that way. We understand, again, that it's really not the traditional way to speak about things like this in a public forum, but when persons who are in recovery trying to normalize their life and they've been exposed to so many negative sexual things, it's very important to have an opportunity to understand genuinely and authentically, without shame, what the Torah has to offer in terms of positive sexual experiences. If anybody has any questions, they can feel free to text to 718-793-1376, 718-793-1376. Or email to simchafeuerman@gmail.com. That's S-I-M-C-H-A-F as in Frank, E-U-E-R-M-A-N @gmail.com. I also would like to say one other point that I have said briefly, but it's worth stressing. Each of you in your own discovery and work on your compulsive sexual behavior, on your addictions, on your triggers, I can't vouch for what might trigger you in terms of this work. We're talking about sexuality. We're talking about halachas of sexuality and hashkafas of sexuality, but we are talking about sexuality. And it's worth noting that the Rambam in Hilchos Deos and Perek Beis, Halacha Aleph, makes a very interesting observation. And he says that just like when a person is sick, oftentimes the food that normally would make him sick now makes him healthy, and the other way around. So, for example, one might have to take literally bitter medicine, that the medicine tastes very bitter. It's not normal, but for somebody who's sick, the medicine works. And the other way around, sometimes things that are normally attractive and healthy for healthy people can be very destructive to sick people. The Rambam says it's the same thing with cholei hanefesh, with illnesses of character. That's what the Rambam really means over there. You have to look it up and see the context. But he really means cholei hanefesh, and he says that oftentimes when somebody has an illness of character, things that normally should be pleasant feel unpleasant, and things that normally are unpleasant would feel pleasant. And you know, that's very relevant to our discussion here, which is that we're talking about how to have a healthy and normal and fulfilling Torah intimacy, not Torah intimacy, because intimacy is just plain old intimacy, but intimacy with, you know, with an understanding of how the Torah would like us to do that, and what's the optimum and such. And that some of you, depending on where you're up to in your recovery, just like a sick person can't always tolerate healthy food, some of these discussions may not be for you. And you know, I'm not your sponsor, I'm not your posik, and I'm not even your therapist. I'm just giving a shiur today. So the point is that you really all have to think about that, because you know, I don't want to be in a position of triggering any of you, and neither do you. But it's something that really requires thought. And as we, you know, get deeper into the content and we talk about some very important issues, but issues that have to do with desire and need, which is very basic and human, and all people should have the right to enjoy that, it might have a different context for somebody who is working on their recovery. You know, I have no addiction to alcohol. I enjoy drinking wine Friday night. I enjoy getting a little bit high on Friday night. I'm not an alcoholic. It's the right thing to do. You're supposed to. There's a reason why you make Kiddush on wine. Chazal didn't want you making Kiddush on grape juice. They want you making Kiddush on wine. You could be yosu with grape juice, but that's not what's ideal. Nevertheless, an alcoholic can't have a drop of wine. So all of you have to think that one through for yourself. Now, in what we were discussing the past couple of weeks, it's really led us to what is going to be a very complex and nuanced unit. And it's going to take probably more than one shiur, maybe even more than two shiur, and we'll see how long it takes to talk through the Torah's view on the man's pleasure. Because we've discussed it in the other shiurim, and we're not going to go over it again. We've discussed it. It's very clear that from the Torah that a man has a responsibility to not only be intimate with his wife, but very specifically to make sure that she receives sexual pleasure. And the question is, what is the Torah's viewpoint on a man experiencing sexual pleasure? Is it ideal to want it, to desire it, to experience it? Should a person take a more abnegating position on it? And there are many sources, somewhat contradictory, and we're going to try to, over the next few shiurim, to review these classic texts and fundamental sources, and also talk about what might be a reasonable approach that's informed from a humanistic, psychological point of view, trying to understand what it is that really is the best path given all the various Torah ideas about this subject. So let's start with what is really a foundational text, which is the Gemara Nedarim on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph through Chaf Amud Beis. And it's quite frank. The Gemara says, and I'll just read it and translate it, Om Rabbi Yochanan ben Dahavoy, Rabbi Yochanan ben Dahavoy said over, Arba Dvarim, Socholi Malach Yasharis. Four things were told to me by the ministering angels. Now, we'll see later that the Gemara actually doesn't really mean angels told him that. But nevertheless, it was very holy rabbis. He called them Malachi Asharis, ministering angels, because they were lived life on such a high level of abstention. So these were the four things told to me by the angelic people, so to speak. Chagrin mipnei mahavyan. Why do people have lame children, crippled children? Mipnei shehov chamesh shulchanim. Because they overturned the table. That is a euphemism. If you look in Tosis over there, Rashi in one text, that's a euphemism for anal sex, turning the table over. And this is why they have chagrin. That's why they have crippled children. Ilmim, why do they have mute children? Mipnei mahavyan, mipnei shemanashkim, alosam mokum. Because they kiss the makom ha'erva, they kiss the private area. Charshim mipnei mahavyan, why do they have deaf children? Mipnei shemasaprim b'shas tashmesh, because they talk during intercourse. Subim pnei mahavyan, why do they have blind children? Mipnei shemastaklim b'osam mokum, because they look at the forbidden area, the private area, to look at. Uriminhu. So that's the Gemara, the first statement from Rabbi Yochanan ben Dahavai. And without getting into the deeper mechanics of this, we will see later, probably not in today's shiur, that there is a very strong belief expressed by different Rishonim, slightly differently, but a very strong belief that the state of mind that the parents are in at the moment of conception and perhaps extending through pregnancy, but certainly at the moment of conception, the state of mind has a impact on the intellectual and spiritual, shall we say, status or disposition of the child. And it's a very important Jewish belief, and I hope that we'll have a chance to explore that in much greater depth. There's a lot to say about it, but the Chazal seem to have been of a belief that the state of mind of the parents at the moment of conception has an enormous influence on the spiritual, intellectual, physical disposition of the child that's being conceived. So, without going into the details of the why and the what, if people engage in different less modest practices, then it has an impact on the child that's going to be conceived in that act. Gemara has a problem with that, though. Or minhu, we will literally means throw another teaching against this, because Shalos Imashalom was the wife of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, a Tana, and they asked the wife of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, "Mipnei ma bonecha yifisim beyoser?" She had beautiful children, and they asked her, you know, "To what credit do you have such beautiful children?" Amalahen, she said to them, "Eino mesaper imi lo betchilas halayla." He does not talk to me, and this is a euphemism for if not intercourse itself, all the preparation. He does not discuss with me in the beginning of the night. By the way, literally intercourse means to, you know, to relate and connect. So maybe some of you that are from the United States and went to a regular grade school education, right, by the time you're in fourth or fifth grade and you learn about some colonial decree called the Non-Intercourse Act, it's very hard for the teachers to teach that without the kids giggling, right? But anyway, so intercourse just means exchange. So Masaper might be a one-to-one translation. But anyway, she says, "He did not talk to me or have intercourse with me, lo b'tchilas halayla, lo b'sof halayla, not in the beginning of the night, not in the end of the night, ela b'chatzos halayla, right at midnight. And when he would engage with me, he would only reveal a tefach and then cover up a tefach, which means different things. We'll eventually have a chance to understand that better. V'doma olav kami shekaf oshed. And it appeared as if he was taken over by a demon. There are slight variations in how to understand this, but the upshot is it would seem that Elazar ben Hyrcanus would do the act very quickly without any interest in obtaining his own pleasure. I know that one who would not look at the Rishonim would probably get a different idea from the phrase as if he's taken over by a demon. You know, it would sound like he would be in a very lustful state. None of the Rishonim give such an interpretation, and the Rishonim had a great advantage over us, which is that they had an intact tradition, an oral tradition of how to understand and read the Gemara. You know, when it comes to Pasuk Chumash, you really have the ability. You can look at the Rashbam in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. You have the ability to make up your own pshatim. Whatever the psukim look like, you know, you have a right to interpret. When it comes to the Gemara, you can't do that. There's no pasha pshat in the Gemara. You have to really have also the tradition of how it's understood. Nobody says kamisha kafo shade means that he was in a lustful state. It means, to one degree or other, that he hurried the act and did not seem to take any pleasure for himself. Different pshatim, different variations, but all along the same theme. So that was Ima Shalom talking about how her husband, Rav Elazar ben Hyrcanus, conducted himself. And not only that, she relates, V'amayti lo, matam. And I asked him, Ima Shalom said, I asked my husband, you know, why do you engage in intercourse in this way? V'amrli, kedesh lo eten es einai b'isha acheres. So I will not have my eyes or my thoughts on another woman, and that somehow, even though it won't be that they're real bastard children because they're not conceived in a real prohibited relationship, but since maybe if my thought for a moment would move to another person other than you, it would be as if I'm having an adulterous liaison, and the children would have some shemitz of mamzerus, some degree of mamzerus. Now, there's so much to say about this, and we'll never have enough time to say all of it. I do think one interesting point is that the rabbis are talking to Ima Shalom. They're not talking to Relezer ben Hyrcanus. They want to know what she thinks. They want to get the inside story. And she tells over that she asked her husband, why do you go so quickly, right? If we're learning Kimi Shekafo Sheh, it means that he goes through intercourse very quickly and doesn't take any pleasure. She wants to know this. It's not hard to imagine that she has a vested interest. The woman wants intimacy too. And he gives her an answer that satisfies her. He tells her, because I don't want to have even for a moment a thought about another woman while I'm engaged with you, and therefore, I don't want our children to become like their mamzerim, and therefore I go through the act quickly. So I think that's a very important point to establish right away, which is whatever Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was doing, and whether that is a midah for other people to engage in or not, he did it in service of his wife as well as himself, and his wife asked for a justification, and she was given a justification, and that apparently satisfied her, literally satisfied her, meaning that that was an acceptable form of intimacy to her because she felt that he was doing this in order to make them have beautiful children and in order that he stay in some way utterly loyal to her. Now, of course, the question is, is everybody expected to behave that way? And that's going to be the topic of today's shir and many shir to come because there's a lot of detail on this. But let's not lose fact of the flow of the Gemara. Lose sight of the flow of the Gemara. The Gemara posited that talking during intercourse, it would seem, is a problematic statement. And yet, Ima Shalom, the wife of the saintly Relezer ben Hyrcanus, described their act of being intimate as talking, which means that talking definitely was a part of the ball game. So the question is, why? The question is, how do you reconcile that? The Gemara says, Lo kasha, haba mili de tashmish, haba mili achroniyaisa, achroniyaisa. You can talk during intercourse about things that relate to intimacy. You can't, pick up the phone or talk about your shopping list for tomorrow. But things that relate to the bond and intimacy, one can talk about during Tashmish. So that's an important point. And perhaps also, again, just for thought, that the concept that the different things that are forbidden, they're forbidden when they're done not in the context of intimacy. But anyway, we don't know that. All we know here right now is, at least in regard to talking, that is true. So talking in relation to having tashrish and being connected is valid. Talking about other stuff is not. Then we get an interesting statement. Amar Rav Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Zo divrei Yochanan ben Dahavoy. These are the words of Yochanan ben Dahavoy. That's his opinion. Avo amru chachamim. But the chachamim said, Ein halacha ki Yochanan ben Dahavoy. The halacha is not in accordance with Yochanan ben Dahavoy, ela kol ma she'odem rotzeh la'asos b'ishto osa. Whatever a man wishes to do with his wife, he may do so. Moshel lebasar havam beis hatabach. It's comparable to a person who purchases some meat from the butcher. Rotzeh la'ochlo b'melech ochlo. Someone who wants to eat it salted can eat it salted. Tzali ochlo, roasted, he can eat it roasted. Mavushel ochlo, if he wants to eat it boiled, he can eat it. Shaluk, thoroughly boiled ochlo, like in a stew. V'chein hadag, v'chein dag abomi beis atzayid, similar to a fish, the same thing. Now, They're not talking about treating the woman like she's an object, because there are other Gemaras that talk about the Gemara in Erevin, I think on we spoke about it in another session, but I think on Daf Kuf or Kuf Aleph, it talks about you're not allowed to engage in intercourse without her permission and forcing her. All it's really saying is that that just like people have different preferences for how they eat, and the Torah doesn't weigh in on the morality of whether you like your meat salted or whether you like your meat with mustard. The Torah doesn't weigh in on the morality of how you, what your arousal pattern is, of how you enjoy being sexual. The way Rabbi Yochanan seems to be saying it, it's a non-moral issue. Is it moral to like chocolate ice cream over vanilla ice cream? No, it's not a moral choice. There's no mitzvah in the Torah to think about, should I have chocolate ice cream or should I have vanilla ice cream? Right? So if a person likes doing things one way, they can do it one way. If they like doing things another way, they can do it another way. That's Rabbi Yochanan's comment on Rabbi Yochanan ben Dov. Right? Then the Gemara says that who are these man malachi asharis? Who are these ministering angels that Rabbi Yochanan ben Dov was quoting? Rabbanan. You have to say it's just a group of Rabbanan. It's a rabbinic opinion. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Dovai was talking about something that he had learned from the ministering angels, they would know about the formation of the child. And if they were saying that all these things would cause a child to be improperly developed, how could we dismiss that? So it must mean that they're not really ministering angels. They're just a group of Rabbanan that had an opinion. So then the Gemara says, "V'mai koraluhu malachi asharis." Why are they malachi asharis then? Why are they called ministering angels? "D'metzayini k'malachi asharis." Because they conduct themselves with such excellence, meaning they are on such a high level, unlike us, they're on such a high, that would be the implication, unlike us, they're on such a high level, that they conduct themselves like ministering angels. And then, Hahida Asoy L'Kameh de Rebbe, a woman came to Rebbe, Amra Lo Rebbe, she said to Rebbe, Arachti Lo Shulchan, I made a beautiful table for my husband, the Hafcho, and he turned it over. So this woman was tanua, but she really was troubled. She couldn't say explicitly to the rabbi what her husband was doing, but she was saying that I made a beautiful bed, meaning I wanted to engage in a normal sexual practice. I'm reasonably, attractive, interested woman, and my husband turned the table upside down, meaning he wanted to engage in some other kind of perverse sexual behavior. Perhaps it might very well be, again, the metaphor for anal sex, but it may be something else. The point is that the woman was going to the rabbi for guidance because she wanted things to be very modest, and she was quite confused at her husband's strange behavior. Now, this is Babylonia, might have been Alexandria. I'm not sure where Rebbe lived, but they didn't have access to smartphones, but still, her husband had a much greater idea. It was much less naive about sexual practices, and he wanted to do something that she, found to be strange. So, what did he answer back? Amar lo, he said to her, Biti, my daughter, Torah hi tirticha, bani ma'aselecha. So he said that the Torah permits this. Again, it doesn't mean that she was being dehumanized. That's a very different issue. It means that she was concerned about the modesty issue, and he was saying no. That perhaps your husband could be more modest if he wants to, but that's not necessarily a requirement, and that he can do as he wishes. Now, just by the way, how do we know that Ima Shalom was the wife of the Tana, Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus? You can look up, as an example, a Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Nedtes Amid Beis, where you can see that he is, that she is Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus's wife. Now, what does Shulchan Aruch say? Right, because we can't paskin from a Gemara. The Gemara is a very interesting Gemara. There's a lot more to say about this Gemara, but what does Shulchan Aruch say? So Shulchan Aruch says the following. You can find this in Aruch Chaim, Reish Mem, Sif Aleph, and it says like this, Im Hayan Nosui, if you are married, Lo Yeragel B'Yosrim Ishto, one should not be too frequently with his wife, Ela Ba'ona Hamur B'Torah, only the regular times that are prescribed by the Torah, which is based on profession. So atayolim sheparnasos and mitzuyelahem vein porin mas onosim b'chol yom. So people that are men of leisure, who don't have to work very hard, they have an obligation to be with their wives intimately every day. Hapoalim shosim lacha be'ir, workers, day laborers who don't have to travel. No, day laborers that have to travel to a different city. Shosim lach v'yacheres, v'lonim l'chol layla b'vateyem, but they come home at night. Pamachas v'shavua, once a week. Because the travel is exhausting. The most malacha b'iram, if they have to do work in their city, they don't have to travel pamayim b'shavua, twice a week. Hachamorim achas v'shavua, donkey riders, once a week. The Gemara goes through different professions. Not the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, but it's based on a braisa. The point is that based on the profession that the person is in and how physically drained they are, the wife understands the man's limitations, and the man's obligation is to engage to it to a reasonable extent what he's able to do. Then Shulchanor goes on to say, a man is obligated on mikveh night to pay attention to his wife, and when he's about to leave on a journey. These are important times of intimacy where the wife expects it and the man should do it. If you're going for a dvar mitzvah, you have an exemption. You don't have to. Of course, you still could. It's a good idea, but you're not obligated to because you're not. Basically, when you're doing a dvar mitzvah, you kind of get special courtesies because you're involved in such an important task. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It means you're not obligated in the same way. Even if the wife is nursing and there's no apparent opportunity to be mekayim puravu, you still should pay her affection. And v'umaker b'ashi mishtadal to meratza also, and it appears that she's interested in being sexual. Mekashetes atzma lefanav, and she adorns herself. Then if it's apparent that she wants to be noticed, the man is obligated to be pokate her. Fakda means, from the Hebrew, the Shorish, it means like to appoint, to remember. He has to notice her and give her her rights of intimacy. So we have a lot more to say about this, and this is not finished. And you, as I said, these shiurim are not halachic shiurim in the sense that I'm a posek. I'm sharing with you whatever it is that I've had the privilege of learning, and you really will have to do more research. So we're going to continue this next week. I will just say that this story is not ended, but let's talk about where we're up to in the story, right? Where we're up to in the story is we've got two different views in the Gemara, one that seems to be exceedingly exacting and meticulous and concerned about the state of mind during intercourse, and disastrous results will happen if the husband and wife are not engaged in a very pure and holy act. We've got then Rabbi Yochanan that says that's really only for the ministering angels, you know, for people who are really angelic, but regular people, there's really no a moral import. It's like choosing chocolate ice cream over vanilla ice cream, no big deal, right? And then we start to see in Shulchan Aruch codifies things as, again, seeming to be moving more toward the spectrum of Rabbi Yochanan ben Dehavoy, which is to limit pleasure, right? We're going to see more about what Shulchan Aruch has to say, but right now, at this point, the man is not supposed to engage in too much intercourse. He's supposed to fulfill his obligations to his wife, and if he senses his wife has a sexual need, he is obligated to fulfill it, But the man's own pleasure seems to be really not on the view screen, and if anything, discouraged. That's where we're up to so far. Rav Yosef Karo, Shulchan Aruch, middle of the first sif in Reish Mem. A lot more to say. Bezus Hashem, we will do so and discover more. I do have to run. I'm going to just remind people that they can text questions to 718-793-1376. They can send email questions to simchafeuerman@gmail.com, S-I-M-C-H-A-F-E-U-E-R-M-A-N@gmail.com.